I'm Dr. Alexa Nineaber with Biosoap Natural Medicine. I'm a naturopathic medical doctor and certified functional physician in Meridian, Idaho, and our clinic specializes in natural health, wellness, and aesthetics for the whole human. Today, I am in Chicago for the ANP's National Convention, and I have the pleasure of talking to Dr. Corey Sabala.
Corey, first of all, say your name and where you came from.
Corey Sabala. S is silent.
Zabala. Okay.
Yep. Corey Zabala in Chicago for the ANP conference 2024. Came from Ketchum, Idaho, Sun Valley, Idaho.
And that's where you live for how long?
Lived there for 6 years now. Practiced there for 5.5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you went to the Portland school?
Yep. NUNM, NCNM when I went there, NUNM now.
That's right.
So, yes.
From hard
it changed break. While I was there or right after. I can't remember. Yeah. It was really weird.
Yeah.
So,
and what's your practice name in Sun Valley?
Sun Valley Natural Medicine.
Oh, well, that's easy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I can remember that.
Yeah. That's a goal.
And you and your wife are the practitioners there?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. So my wife, Molly Parker Zavala, and me are the two practitioners there. And we've been... Yeah, we set it up to basically help out the local community and be able to provide integrative care in Ketchum.
Cool.
Yeah, super cool. A lot of fun.
Yeah. And did you practice anywhere else before that?
I did in Portland, Oregon. So I did that for 3 years.
Okay.
Yeah, give or take.
Tell me more about how you got into like gut health and this whole thing.
So I got into gut health purely through my wife. So weirdly enough, she has been doing microbiome care health for ever since she started her naturopathic program.
Okay.
And she actually worked underneath the initial individuals, Mark Davis and Carmen Campbell, to help create the encapsulated FMT for her. So, I mean, 2010, it was already a known factor for C. diff and recurrent C. diff at that
Well,
point. So it was like, it wasn't like a...
You've heard of like fecal transplants, but they were not oral.
Correct.
And yep. Those studies.
So colonoscopy was the main aspect of it.
Yeah.
They do nasogastro tubes. They did enemas as well, quite a few.
Right.
No oral capsules and stuff.
Right.
So like that's a potentially newer concept.
So is that the concept you were exposed to at first, or was it actual transplants?
Colonoscopy was the initial one. Just okay. Because that's what the gastroenterologists were doing, and that's what the, you know, if you're in a hospital setting, you can get recurrent C. diff, that's what they're going to use.
And it's also approved for babies, right? The C. diff, like newborns?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the whole entire like back and forth of that, but there is some level of, you need to help someone with C. diff, period. The easiest way to do it, they will always start with like their first line defenses, vancomycin, and then they'll go on to the next steps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The higher just concept of using an oral transplant for something that is going to be inoculated in the colon, how does that work? Why did you think like, okay, this works? Is it just because you saw people getting better? Or how did you be like, this seems like a good idea?
Yeah. So at that point, the group that my wife was a part of were already utilizing it and already seeing the effects of it. So that was easy to buy there. Since then, research has come out and actually seen that capsules versus colonoscopy are very similar in efficacy.
No kidding.
Yep. So, you know, you're looking at somewhere, and I know the numbers change. Some people say 80 to like 95, 92%. And like, it kind of bounces around based off of what's going on. It's going to, right? There's variables with all of this. So with the donors, with how you actually track a donor, with how you look at what a donor is. And you know, they were looking at donors a little bit differently, but they were still utilizing like the FDA's kind of like regulation for it. Like what Open Biome was using, which is like the main stool bank back then.
Right. I heard of them that. And do you typically see that the oral is all people need in terms of when they're utilizing a treatment like this or?
For recurrent C. diff?
No.
Yeah.
More so for other different types of conditions.
Yeah.
That, so, that's good to know that C. diff could just be treated that way standalone.
Yeah. So recurrent C. diff is the one thing that in the United States, the FDA allows FMT to be used for. So live FMT can be utilized for it. Anything else you have to use them, you know.
When you say live,
nope.
What do you mean?
That means that the actual bacteria are alive. And so live FMT is ultimately kind of like the short term of like what you're looking
at. And that is not what's in an oral capsule?
No. That is what's in an oral capsule of live FMT. In the realm of the microbiome, there was a study done in 2017 that showed that the bacteria is actually not the main component. The live bacteria is not actually the main component of an FMT. It was from the Ott et al. Study in 2017. And my wife's friends and people that she worked with, colleagues that she worked with, during that initial live FFT went off and started their own practice and actually created their own live FFTs as well. Then a pandemic happened.
Ah.
And you cannot use live FFT anymore because of the potential for infection risk.
Yes. Specifically with COVID?
Correct. Yeah. So viral infectious risk is a potential. We weren't sure how was being transmissible.
And
so we just
wanted
to be
very cautious
and careful with it. So the last thing we want to do is say, hey, let's share this or that.
Absolutely.
When they did that, there's a lot of folks who were utilizing and wanted to utilize live FFT, but were unable to.
Yeah.
So seeing the study in 2017, and they even did a comparison of a C. diff patient. So they actually gave a healthy donor remove the bacteria, live bacteria, and actually saw their microbiome change to a healthy microbiome is how this all got started.
Wow.
Yep. And so the idea to how do you stabilize it? How do you reduce the infectious risk? How do you make sure that this is a supplement that is going to be potentially beneficial?
Right.
You sterilize it. So through an autoclave.
Okay.
And then you freeze dry it.
Well, if you're sterilizing it, aren't you killing off the things you want?
100%. But you're making something as well. That's the coolest part.
Okay.
So you're killing off bacteria, you're killing off the viruses, you're killing off a lot of the things that are part of it, but you're developing and creating the postbiotics. So postbiotics are a component of bacteria, and it can either be the metabolism of the food, so like prebiotic, or it can actually, when the bacteria die, they're actually creating a postbiotic. And that postbiotic is then a signal, basically like a cellular signal that can then talk locally to the GI tract or go into the circulation and actually talk to like the different organ systems.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've heard of prebiotics, you've heard of probiotics, but I've never heard of a postbiotic.
Check.
Had you ever heard of that in school before something like this?
Not at all. No.
I mean, is that the terminology you use when thinking about something like this? Is postbiotic?
This is a little bit more complex than just a postbiotic, but it's the term that we live with because that is the majority of what's there.
And if I'm understanding what you're saying correctly, it's a bacteria, something it's creating in the process of the way you're treating it?
Correct. It's kind of like the end product of a bacteria, whether it's life or it's like through metabolism.
Okay.
Yep. And then you have metabolites, and that's from like the whole entire other thing of like digestion and things like that. So like there's two components of like the human microbiome, and there's probably more, but postbiotics and metabolites are like the two most like well-known.
So one of the lectures that was the last hour was all about the extremely specific stool different tests that you can do in terms of mapping out the different genus and species of what's currently in someone's colon, you know, and the different types of treatments that you can use, really honing in around like LPS risk and, you know, the things that you want to utilize to make butyrate. And a lot of those things are herbs. A lot of those things are, you know, antimicrobial type of mechanism of action. So how does something like this kind of fit into that whole approach when you are seeing people for that holistic, how you're going to approach someone's gut?
Yeah. So no matter what, whenever you look at GI health, you have to meet people where they're at. And part of that idea of removing something is part of, you know, the whole concept of like the four R's with digestion. Okay, if we're going to remove something, that's great. But that means that antimicrobials or antibacterials or, you know, anti-whatever that you're going to be utilized.
And you're naturally going to kill other things in the process.
Correct, yeah. There's nothing that is super specific on like, hey, this is the one bug I'm going to touch.
Right.
So when you use something that has systemic effects, you're going to see systemic effects.
Right.
And so that's always a concern whenever you're dealing with someone who may have and may be more prone to developing an infection because they may have an overgrowth or they even may be more prone to having like a C. diff infection.
Right.
We've seen people who have had C. diff from something like ADP, which is like oregano.
Right.
And that is scary.
Which is why I'm super cautious about giving people oregano and people look at me like I'm crazy.
Yeah.
But I swear, there's so often, especially in the COVID time, right? Yeah, patients would come in and be like, well, I'm taking oregano every day, so I must be good. And I'm like, I don't directly start saying this, but, you know, we start breaking down that their gut is off and they don't feel well, or they're really constipated, they have a ton of diarrhea. And I'm like, well, you are taking a really high dose of this antimicrobial herb that could be killing off the good microbiome. And they're like, I've never heard that. And I'm like, you know, and that's sad because I think, you know, people see it like super supplements of like, this is going to kill all the things. It kills all the things.
Well, the trouble or potentially problematic effects of like direct to consumer versus like professional formulas. So it's like, I mean, yes, anybody can go out and buy some of these antimicrobials without even like thinking twice about
it. Right. And people think because it's an herb, it can't hurt me like an antibiotic.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I mean, we were exposed to that, you know, within the first year at school. And sometimes you have to remind yourself that that's not how people think, or it's just not intuitive.
Yeah.
Because we're made to believe just on this macro marketing level of herbs are natural and they're good. What's in the sample bag?
The sample's 7 capsules, or crapsules, I should say. Trademark crapsules.
You did not.
Yeah. So those are 7 crapsules of thinamide.
I think I have 7 crapsules in my bag, too. I just, I'm a little scared about
it. If you don't, we'll give you some.
No, you did.
We'll take them together.
Okay, so personal question.
Yes.
Do you feel like you poop better since you used
100%.
Like, were you constipation or diarrhea
predominant? IBS-D.
D. Okay. Yeah. And so how long did it really kind of take for you to feel like you had benefit?
The hard part about that is I was taken originally because I had TBI and I broke my back.
Oh, well, that's wild.
Yep. And that was a moment of trying to reduce the...
That's an entirely different treatment protocol.
Correct. Yep. So I did the other protocol along with this, but this has the potential to reduce inflammation and provide oxidative stress.
So sometimes you're utilizing this in more of the holistic perspective of inflammation, not just the gut.
100%. Yeah. I mean, you have to imagine the gut is a component, but this is not the only thing that it's touching, which means that you have to think about it in a holistic factor.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And how'd you break your back?
Mountain biking.
Oh, for your fun at least?
No.
Oh.
Locked in, yeah. But it was up in Stanley to the helicopter to get blown. It was pretty brutal.
Oh my gosh, I'm really sorry. How long was that?
Hudson was 4 months old. So that would have been about 2 years ago, a year and a half ago.
What's the recovery like?
I was in a race for 3 months, and then I did PT for 3 months. The biggest thing was the TBI.
Sure.
I had to kind of learn how to like talk and walk and all of that.
Were you wearing a helmet?
I was.
The helmet?
It got crushed.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's why you always wear a helmet.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so you were the other people that were able to get emergency services to you?
Ish, yeah. So I was riding with somebody. They were ahead of me, and then someone else found me, and then the person who was ahead of me actually got to the end and realized I wasn't there, and then they came back to find me, and then we got emergency services.
I feel like I want to just talk to you about just that for a little. Like, but you're a walking, talking example that there's hope after someone goes through something like that.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, you know, when you have a four-month-old kid at home, it turns out you... try to heal as fast as possible.
I bet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that at all.
Do everything for our families, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I had no idea about any of that. I'm really glad you're okay.
Yeah. When we first met, actually, I was probably in a brace.
No kidding.
Yeah. I just wore it in my business shirt.
Well, I guess you can't really tell on Zoom.
No.
Yeah.
That's the beauty. No, I'm just sitting up super straight.
Well, tell me about, like, what are, like, the key 3 things to take away from something like this? Because when you first kind of talk about this crapsule and come talk shit with me and all of this, it's a little scary. So, like, how do you talk about this? What are, like, the 3 key takeaways you want people to know about it?
Okay, so the thing about it, as far as what it is it's the first ever stool-derived postbiotic.
Okay.
Which is amazing. It is a complex ecosystem-based approach to your health, which means that you're not just trying to touch one thing. A lot of people come to us and are like, oh, GI health. Yeah, but GI touches a lot of other aspects.
Sure.
When I started taking it for my broken back and TBI, I also noticed my IBS-D and my anxiety both improved. And so mental health, a component of how the GI tract actually does digestion, like takes care of everything. Yes, that's going to be a component.
Yeah.
But it touches some of the other aspects that you have to imagine that's also part of it. The cool thing about it is it works both ways. So it can work for diarrhea, it can work for constipation, and that can be a amazing kind of like way to see how the body has a balance, a homeostasis, and it has this effect to find where you're at and help you where you need to go. And so our goal is always to kind of say, hey, we should be having a healthy bristles, you know, 3 or 4 every day, bowel movement. And if we're not, then that's a potential issue and we need to do something about it.
I know exactly what you meant by that. But
yes.
What you're talking about, the poop chart.
Yes, the Bristol stool chart is awesome and everyone should look at it.
I always say it makes the best white elephant gift on a mug that you could ever give anyone is this Bristol
stool chart. You would enjoy our marketing team.
I love it.
As we created one with a stool chart on it.
That's incredible. Okay, so that's the number one. What's the number 2?
Oh yeah, I kind of said a lot of things. The cool thing about it is you don't need a lot. So slow and low is always kind of like a good process to look at whenever you're doing like GI health or when you're trying to like migrate or move the microbiome.
100%.
Because of the fact that if you go too hard, too fast, then you're going to notice it and it's going to affect that individual.
It is
because of the fact that, like, if you're messing with someone's communication, so cellular communication for the GI tract and the microbiome, you're going to see the effects of the cells trying to understand too much communication. So it's like going out into like a busy restaurant and trying to think. Sometimes you can't because there's a lot going on. Too many people are talking. You will walk into a separate room very quietly, and like one person comes in, you can have communication, you can have something going on. You can develop a relationship with that. So yeah. That's kind of how I look at this, where it's like, we usually start with one capsule a day, and usually that's sufficient. We can change it from there based off.
And always go up.
Yeah, you can always go up. You can even go down from there, because if you break the capsule up, super. Yep.
Interesting, and like use it in food.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, what's the number three?
Number three is, I don't know. I mean, the cool thing about this is you are touching so many different aspects from what a healthy donor is. And the goal of the whole component of this is you have to use somebody else's healthy lifestyle to make sure that you feel as good as possible. And that's kind of what we're doing here. The goal is, how do we get you to have a healthy lifestyle so you don't need to utilize somebody else's?
Got it.
And that's where we actually get to use these really healthy donors. We get to use these really healthy individuals, and we get to take the benefit from them.
So your hope is that it's a timeline.
Yeah.
And that, like, someone kind of reestablishes a healthy microbiome and they're good on their own feeding it with their diet.
100%. We know about the microbiome diet. We know about all of the components of like what feeds a healthy microbiome. We know it doesn't work for every single person, but we know that it can take time, and to be able to provide something to them while they're going through that phase allows them to actually feel better during all of that process.
And what's that donor screening process like?
It's extensive.
I bet. So, right?
Yeah. And we have a quiz on our website that you can go to, and it's super fun because it's 10 questions.
Okay.
And it usually knocks out about 95% of the people.
To like become a donor.
Yep. So you have to be vaginally birthed. You have to be breastfed for X amount of time. You have to have X amount of antibiotic use, period. Like, you not go over that. You have to have a healthy bowel movement every day, breast stool three or four. You know, and we have to be able to, like, eating healthy. We have to have, you know, mental health has to be looked at. Chronic health has to be looked at. Your family history has to be looked at. Like, all of this is a component. So once you get through those 10 questions, there's about 120 to 200. I can't remember exactly now what we've done.
Yeah.
But there's an entire other questionnaire. And then there's a physical exam that goes into it. And then there's testing that goes into it to make sure that we're not seeing infectious disease. We're not seeing anything else. And we're actually seeing health.
Two final quick questions for you. One, where do people go to find more? Is it a website?
Yep. Yeah. www.thaena.com. And that's thaena.com.
For people kind of wanting to know more in terms of how a practitioner would use this in their office, in terms of more of our like functional medicine, naturopathic community.
Yeah.
Like, what do we need to know in terms of implementing something like this, in terms of like what you can and can't do?
Yep. So, you know, generally speaking, we want to use this with a lot of different people, just because of the fact that you look at the potential of live FMT and you can imagine where that kind of comes from, what this has potential to do. The things that we're always cautious of is our donors have to eat everything, which means there are trace amounts of every food in this.
Sure.
And so that means dairy, it means gluten, it means shellfish, it means peanuts. So we always tell people, hey, if we need to know about something, we always check their allergens. If we want to test it, we can. And what I usually tell people, you can put a little bit on your skin, kind of wet it, and just see if it actually affects you at all. You can try a smaller amount. You can actually pop it open and just see.
What would you think about a person with like a lactose issue? Like,
shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that this is pre-digested and pre-fermented, right? Sure. So the whole idea of like postbiotics is literally that the ones that are on the market originally are yeast that have been fermented in tanks. This is fermented in the human body tank. And that's kind of what we look at it as.
Cool.
Yeah. And so it's a thing that's pre-digested, which means that you should not have as difficult a time of digesting it, especially with people who are healthy and able to digest and assimilate.
But it's good to know about the people who do have known the food allergies.
The other aspect or group would be autoimmune condition, just because of the fact that this does have an immunologic response, because it does have cell signals to actually talk to those, which means that you could develop or create an acute flare if you high dose, or if you are in a flare already, or you're about to go into a flare.
Got it.
The thing is, you want to be cautious. That's where that slow and low comes into
play. Sure. That makes sense.
Those are the two biggies. You know, there's obviously more out there that we're still learning about, but as far as what is necessary to know about it. You can kind of utilize this for a lot of different things. What I usually tell people is, hey, if you're going to be working on someone's gut and they're not able to digest or assimilate things well, or if they're not able to eat as many foods as they want to or hope to, this is a great thing to add on.
And is this one of those things that we consider, like with the rest of the supplement industry, no one supplement is used to treat anything, because that is not what the FDA says we can do. But yes, we can use something to try to promote generally health in these different targeted things, and we're not doing anything wrong by utilizing these tools.
Absolutely. So this is a complex item that you can add to your body. It's ultimately very similar to just eating a healthy diet.
Right.
And if that is
almost
treating
like eating someone else's healthy diet.
It is. And the cool thing is, it's eating someone else's healthy diet, but just getting the end product, like positives.
Yeah.
Which is super cool.
My mind is blown right now. I have so many more questions, but that is so helpful.